On a Monday, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Wisconsin is seeing a massive spread of COVID-19. Governor Evers said Friday people let their guard down on WHBY radio.
Not that I'm a big brother here, but when people aren't wearing a mask and aren't doing the social distancing and things like that, that we all know are important, the virus is going to take over, and it has.
We have the state's chief medical officer and state epidemiologist for communicable diseases, Dr. Ryan Westergaard, with us. What do you want to know about the surge? How has COVID touched your family, your community? We're at 800-642-1234. Dr. Westergaard, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate. Thanks for having me.
Well, our state saw a bit of a let up from the surging numbers yesterday, reporting fewer than 2,000 new cases. What can you tell us about the status of the spread?
Well, unfortunately, although yesterday was a slightly lower day, on average over the past week, the data tell us that we're in a worse position than, frankly, we've ever been during this pandemic. We've been averaging upwards of 2,000 cases, and these are spread really throughout the entire state. So there's no region of the state that doesn't have extensive community spread right now, and that's pretty concerning.
What is contributing to the surge?
Well, at the most basic level, this is an extraordinarily contagious virus. So this is what will happen unless we take pretty extraordinary precautions to stop it. The virus spreads from person to person quite easily anytime people are within close contact, such as routine conversation. And what we've learned, the lessons that we've learned over the course of the pandemic is particularly in indoor settings where people are in close proximity, the expectation is that this will spread far and wide unless we are very deliberate and very cautious. You know, those precautions are the things that we talk about in public health that we're trying to get people to adopt on a widespread basis, which are limiting gatherings, you know, wearing face coverings, and by for the most part, staying home and out of close contact with others.
Do you see this as residents letting their guard down, as Governor Evers said there?
I think that's true. You know, we have really good data about the virus, obviously, with all the testing we have. We don't have great ways to track the proportion of people who wear masks and the size of gatherings. That's really up to individual people to make those decisions themselves. But anecdotally, when we talk to health officers around the state, it does seem that people are not taking this as seriously as they should. There's still a lot of areas where mask wearing is not anywhere near universal. And in order for us to turn the corner, that really needs to be our goal. We need to have upwards of 90% of people wearing masks anytime they're around people that aren't part of their household. And we're quite far from that right now, even though we're seeing a big surge. So we clearly need to do much better.
I want to ask you about schools and campuses. Do you think that limiting in-person instruction in our state schools and colleges and universities, is that necessary to stop the high rates of spread infection?
Yeah, well, it's a good question. So we've learned some things. We're still in the process of learning things from a number of outbreaks that we've had in college campuses here in Wisconsin. And the first week in September, we saw really a much higher and much larger and much sooner than expected surge in cases on the UW-Madison campus. And there was a pretty aggressive response that seemed to have worked. The number of cases on this campus and a lot of main campuses really turned the corner rather abruptly. Now, the response to that was a number of things. So you don't know any one of them, which was the most likely to be effective. Limiting in-person instruction was one of those. My sense looking at the data, though, it was actually the restricting of gatherings outside of the classroom that made the biggest difference. They were able to trace infections through contact tracing, through dormitories, and through off-campus locations, and they really were deliberate about flowing and stopping those types of gatherings. And that's probably made more of a difference than actually limiting in-person instruction in the classroom.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Wisconsin's chief medical officer, Ryan Westergaard. He's with us as we look at the pandemic, the state of it. Healthcare workers, we want to hear from you. What would you like to share about the pandemic? Do you have the resources necessary to care for COVID patients and to protect yourself? What are you seeing among COVID-19 in friends and family? Join in at 800-642-1234. Dr. Westergaard, the seven-day average for people who get tested and are positive for COVID is higher than 17%. What does the high positivity rate indicate?
Well, our goal is to keep the positivity rate as low as possible. And some have used a benchmark of 5%. You know, in the eastern states in the U.S., they've been keeping it low around 1%. And that's really a marker that we're doing enough testing. You know, we know that many people who have this infection are asymptomatic and therefore might not come to medical attention. So if we test enough people, if we test so many people that a very large majority are negative, that gives us more confidence that we're not missing as many. When we have case positivity rates 10%, 15% or higher, it makes us a little more concerned that we're not testing enough people and that the spread in the communities might be more widespread than we realize.
Do you think we are testing enough people now?
I think we are going to need to test more people and in different ways than we have in the past. I think testing is not widespread. It's not universally easily accessible, although it's much better than it has been. People with symptoms are able to get tested through their healthcare providers. There's still a lot of instances that we hear about, though, that people who are in close contact, meaning asymptomatic people who are at risk because they were exposed to the virus, there are a lot of places where they're not getting tested as easily. And because, again, as we mentioned, this infection can spread silently in people without symptoms, we need to have systems where we can test everyone who has symptoms and everyone who might be infected without symptoms. That's what is going to give us the clearest picture of where the virus is spreading and how fast.
I want to talk about the idea of super spreader events, those who infect multiple other people with the virus. It could be an event. It could be something else. What kind of super spreader activity are you monitoring in Wisconsin?
Well, particularly as the weather gets colder and people tend to gather inside more than outdoors, the risk is going to be for transmission in gatherings that involve larger numbers of people. So in both in this country and in other countries that have contained the virus very well, some of the initial hotspots when there have been spikes have been in bars and restaurants, particularly bars where people are in close contact, and if they're drinking, they're not generally wearing a mask, at least all of the time. So I think in Wisconsin, as people tend to gather, you know, indoors, to watch football or to hang out at bars, that's going to pose a real threat. If we want to do those things safely, we need to get a much better handle on transmission of the virus, and that's going to call for increased testing, really being deliberate and intentional about staying home when people are sick and adhering to the quarantine recommendation when people are exposed. We do all these things to try to limit how widespread the virus is spreading. It makes those things safer. But it's probably going to be the case in the coming months that, you know, large indoor gatherings with many people is not going to be a good idea. Those are going to remain dangerous for some time as we go through the cold and flu season.
We have Wisconsin's Chief Medical Officer, Ryan Westergaard, who stays with us as we discuss how the state is addressing combating COVID-19. What questions do you have about the virus? What do you want to know about how and where it's spreading fastest in Wisconsin? Do you wear a mask when you leave home? Join in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We'll be back for more State Cap with Dr. Westergaard in a minute. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. Here with us for the State Capitol Report, I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The Wisconsin Department of Health Services reports 81% of the state's hospital beds are filled. The latest two-week snapshot indicates 29 counties are experiencing very high and growing COVID-19 activity. We're discussing the surge with Dr. Ryan Westergaard, the state's epidemiologist for communicable diseases. Dr. Westergaard, how has our state's hospital capacity been changing in this surge? What are you seeing?
The hospital systems around the state have had the luxury of 6 months of time to prepare and think about ways in which they can surge. And by and large, there's an increase in hospital bed utilization, but not a crisis. So we're beginning to see some strain. I put our response, our healthcare, public health response, in really two categories. But the hospital situation is concerning because we're seeing an uptick in hospitalizations and ICU beds, and that could put strain on both staffing and hospital resources. The other part of our response, though, that is beyond strain, it's frankly cracking under the strain, is our local public health infrastructure. So our people who respond to positive tests, do contact tracing, call people when they test positive, call people who have been exposed and give them instructions about how to stay safe and how to quarantine. That system is not able to keep up, and we're in a lot of discussions about how do we support local public health to do their work, because that's the other side, the more upstream, the prevention aspect of our response, and that part's really under strain right now.
Can you put numbers with that? How many more contact tracers do you need in Wisconsin?
Well, it's tricky to estimate because we have 90 plus local and tribal health jurisdictions, and they all have a number of staff, some of which are part-time and some of which are full-time. And they do other things in addition to contact tracing. Mm. So what we hear about our numbers, we were really under strain in July, beginning of August, when we were having 600-700 cases a day. Now that we're in 2,000 cases a day, they're very much struggling to keep up. So probably at least twice as many people as we have, but that's not the only thing that's really concerning. There's a lot of functions that local public health professionals do other than contact tracing. In all of those things, whether it be immunizations or follow-up for other communicable diseases, are all going to be a strain as well. So our public health system is comprised of a lot of really dedicated and hardworking people, but it was frankly too small and too underfunded even before this started. So that's really an unfolding crisis in my view, is that we have to protect all of public health by working together and shrinking this epidemic, because it's putting strain on all parts of the system.
Well, Dr. Westergaard, let's bring in a call now. Mark is joining us from Kimberly. Hi, Mark.
Hi, if I may, I have two questions. I'll try to be succinct. The vaccine may not be a magic bullet because a reservoir is left in a nasal cavity in studies in apes, so it's still transmissible. The patient, it's out of the lungs, patient feels better. And the second is, what are you doing about getting fast, cheap testing? The world and the state, everybody's lagging way behind on this. And colleges in somewhere in the Midwest, they got it right, and they're doing it for opening their school, and it's working. Those are the questions.
Mark, thank you. Do you want to start with the testing question?
Sure. Sure, be happy to. Thanks, Mark. One of the advances in testing that have allowed a lot of different sectors to get good information quickly is the development of what we call point of care or rapid antigen tests. So these are different than the molecular tests like PCR that we've relied on throughout the bulk of our testing. Antigen tests can be done. Some of them require a small device that sits on a desktop to do a reader, to read the results. It can get in 15 minutes or so. And there's newer ones that just are, a piece of cardboard that give you a result in 5 minutes or so. So these are really useful for the reasons you described. We can get rapid results in a lot different settings, and they can be mass produced. So there are millions, hundreds of millions of these devices available now. In Wisconsin, we're getting an allocation of approximately $2 million from the federal government, and we are making those available to both healthcare systems and other organizations that are able to use them for testing. So the future looks brighter in that regard, provided that we use all the different types of tests that are available and use them well, according to the instructions and understand some of the limitations with respect to accuracy. Your first question, Mark, was about vaccines, and I think you're right that, you know, we are likely to have a safe and effective vaccine, but few vaccines are extremely effective, and many are only partially effective. So the whether it's a game changer remains to be seen. I think we're optimistic that we'll have a vaccine that provides, that confers some protection, that lowers the risk of infection, and that can have a pretty substantial effect on transmission in the community if it's widely adopted. But it will be, like all the things we discussed, one tool in our toolkit that we have to use in a widespread way as we can in order to make sure that it has the maximum effect.
Let's bring in Becky now, joining us from Barron County this morning. Hi, Becky.
Hi, good morning. So I have a comment. We've been told in Barron County that if one member of the family tests positive, the rest of the family does not need to be tested because you can just assume they're positive as well. And I'm concerned that that's skewing the numbers down rather than really telling the truth about how many people have it.
Becky, thanks. Yeah, Dr. Westergaard, what do you make of that?
Yeah, thanks, Becky. Our recommendation is for people who have been in close contact to be tested. And the reason for this is, while it's true that the risk of infection is high, not everyone in a household setting will necessarily become infected. And if we can test everybody and understand who is infected and who's not infected, we can potentially prevent transmission by separating people, by staying outside the homes. This is what isolation means for people who are infected, and quarantine means for those who are uninfected. So it serves a really important role for keeping people safe by testing people who have been exposed to understand how do we break those chains of transmission. So our recommendation and the CDC recommendation, we here at the state recommend testing for people who are exposed, and then isolation for people who have been exposed, regardless of whether their test is positive.
Do you find that there is uniformity in how counties are carrying out their messaging on the spread of COVID?
I think there's some variability based on resources and local constraints, particularly when it comes to the ability to do the system of contact tracing and notifying people who've been exposed. Everyone's working with different amounts of resources, and the context locally is different, so it looks a little bit differently. We work pretty hard, and have a pretty collaborative environment with local health officers and us at the state to try to maintain a good communication, so we know what the science tells us is the best strategies. So we have multiple opportunities every week to have a local forum where we answer questions from health officers, similar to what we do at the federal level at the CDC. So it's not perfect, but there's pretty strong attempts at trying to maintain good collaboration communication so we stay on the same page with these recommendations, which frankly can evolve over time as new evidence emerges.
Let's bring in Saul, who is joining us from La Crosse. Hi, Saul, go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Thank you. My question is, and I want to thank you for all the information that you're giving us, what about touching things like food, going to the grocery store, going to the produce department? I want to thank all of our grocery stores in the state for bringing the food out, and loading it in our cars, all this other stuff. But can we go shopping? Can we touch food? Can we touch surfaces? Please, doctor.
Sure. Thanks, all. Excellent question. Respiratory viruses like coronavirus and flu and the common cold virus, we know from a lot of history that they can survive on surfaces. We call this fomite transmission. And that has been a concern throughout the response. But as time has gone by and we've looked at the settings where transmission seems to happen, these so-called super spreader events, it seems for this particular virus, this novel coronavirus, that the majority of spread seems to be person-to-person respiratory transmission. So we can't say that it's impossible that it can be contracted by touching a contaminated surface, but it certainly would be a very, very small minority of the true cases. So I think the answer to your question is yes, we can go shopping, we can eat, take out food. We should just do the normal precautions that we do for preventing the spread of germs in all settings. So disinfecting surfaces that people touch frequently and washing hands. I think just with those things, we can make casual contact much safer and reduce the risk of that sort of what we call fomite transmission. The real risk is respiratory transmission, respiratory droplets. And that's why we need to do things so much differently than we have done with other respiratory virus seasons and wear masks really universally.
Dr. Westergaard, thank you for joining us.
Happy to be here. Thank you.
Dr. Ryan Westergaard is Chief Medical Officer and State Epidemiologist for Communicable Diseases for the Wisconsin Department of Health Services. Coming up, the State Capitol Report continues. We have State Senator Lena Taylor. Milwaukeeans, what do you want to ask your State Senator? What can you share about your health and your economic hit from COVID? How do you want state lawmakers to act now? Your line is 800-642-1234. There's more State Cap with State Senator Lena Taylor right after this news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network.